On today's 100th episode of the Book Basement Podcast, I compile the 10 most valuable teachings from the books I've covered on this show. You'll get coverage of Stoicism, personal development, philosophy, writing, and much more that I've condensed into one single information-packed
episode. Welcome to the
episode.
Book Basement Podcast, where I, Santi, talk about books 5 times a week. On Mondays, you can expect a longer interview, book review, or other book-related content. The rest of the weekdays, I share a book quote I found interesting and break down its meaning. Join me as we learn more about books, their meanings, and get some amazing reading recommendations along the way. Let's get right into today's episode. Hello and welcome to the 100th episode of the Book Basement Podcast. This episode is just going to be a compilation of my favorite and most valuable teachings that I've covered on the podcast. It's been an incredible 100 episodes, and after this goes live, I'll be taking a 2-week break from posting just so I can not only get back to date with my schedule for posting. You may have noticed I didn't post on Friday or Tuesday, but to also be figuring out ways that I can improve the content that I post on here. So I hope you enjoyed this episode and that you are able to revisit some of these ideas that I've covered and hopefully refresh some in your mind and maybe even hear them for the first time. I hope you enjoy. Is someone afraid of change? Well, what can ever come to be without change? What can ever come to be without change? In The Tipping Point, Malcolm Gladwell retells the story of Hush Puppies, how a small, distinct, and indirect change resurfaced the brand. Think of all the innovators, big and small, who changed how something was supposed to be. An online movie distributor? That will never work. That was what Mark Randolph, co-founder of Netflix, was told in the early stages of the company. Really, what would be without change? The answer is nothing. It's not difficult to find an example of someone who was disruptive, changed the way things were done when the unspoken laws said otherwise. As you'll find with other examples, they're usually the normality now. Think of Netflix and the dozens of other companies that walked the path paved by them. Marcus Aurelius was an inditer of change, both presently and in the past. If we stay stuck in the past, there's no way for the future. Under situations of uncertainty and radical change, ask yourself what the world you live in would be if not for change. Like the world did too, oftentimes the best answer is to adapt. If you try and swim directly against the rip current, you'll most likely drown. The best way isn't forwards or backwards, it's the middle. On the road to great achievement, the late bloomer will resemble a failure. Say you had a 33-year-old man. Throughout his life, he's done an odd job here and there, nothing really permanent, exciting, or worthwhile to the outside world. He's always liked painting, but it's never really gone anywhere. To us, that man seems like a failure. He's stuck, not moving, frozen while everyone around him is thawing their true self. Now, this is only an outside perspective. Say this man found a partner or a tightly knit group of friends. These friends or partner watch as every day he disappears into his studio, spending countless hours working to refine his craft. Eventually, the man sells a painting and creates a snowball effect. Soon enough, he has enough money to open up his own gallery, which explodes as people marvel over the intricate and unique approach he's taken to his art. If you looked at this man without knowing that he worked countless years for this, you would most likely assume he's always been like this. Have you noticed that the stories we hear of successful people tend to be prodigies? We hear about those who found their thing when they were young, the chess player who was beating grown-ups at 12 years old, or the astrophysicist who knew the theory of relativity at age 6. Rarely do we look at the late bloomers, those who were not an instant success, who only started to show their talents in the later, more advanced stages of life. It's sad to admit that many would-be late bloomers don't get a chance to bloom. Why? In What the Dog Saw, Malcolm Gladwell explains that in order to achieve their full potential, the late bloomer needs a rock-solid support group. They need a person or a group of to fall back on when they get derailed. I bet if we all look back, there was a time where we thought about or told someone that they were a failure indirectly or indirectly. Next time, refrain. If you see an older or perhaps younger person that isn't up to speed, perhaps they're just a late bloomer. Instead of throwing water on them, help them light the flame. When we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. Walls get in the way of progress, small inconveniences, changes, and reschedulings that are out of your control yet still disappoint you. There is times where we'll be thrown around by the uncertainty of the world, situations where the only option is changing ourselves, what we pay attention to. In Deep Work by Cal Newport, one of the books I'm reading this week, he shares the example of the neurological effects of shifting your attention. In a study conducted where both kids and elderly people were exposed to both positive and negative stimuli, the researchers found that the children treated and reacted to both the negative and positive stimulus in ways according to the positive or negative nature of them. They knew this because they were monitoring the amygdala, the part of the brain responsible for emotion. In contrast, the elderly participants reacted only to the positive stimulus, their amygdalas completely ignoring the negative one. The theory and conclusion that the researchers came to was that older people have trained their minds to shift their attention to the positive and positive only. You too can do this. Change your attention, find the good, the learning experience in a situation. The best moments usually occur through a person's body or mind when it's pushed and stretched to its limits in a voluntary effort to accomplish something meaningful and worthwhile. The Goldilocks effect is one I came to know from The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Basically, it says that in order to reach your full potential state of action, you must do something that isn't too difficult yet not too easy. If you find the balance, you will perform better. It is through deep work that the mind is stretched to its perfect limit, the bullseye of productivity, if you may. A task that is too monotonous will become boring, and a task too difficult will become frustrating, stressful, and anxiety-inducing. However, we can't ignore the last part of the quote, which states that it must be done in a voluntary effort to accomplish something meaningful and worthwhile. Perhaps this explains why some people are happy and content while working on their hobbies rather than school or work. But this does not say that focus shouldn't be sought after in non-hobby experiences. It should, and it can be learned. By reading Deep Work, you'll get some incredible actionable advice that will help you build this habit of deep work, the habit that will take advantage of the Goldilocks effect, and allow you to consume information and produce output in the best, most efficient way possible. The story of Goldilocks is one most would be familiar with. A girl stumbles upon a house and tries the different porridges that are set on the table, tasting each and every one until she finds the one that is just right. For this reason, the principle was named after it. We learn best when things are just right, when the porridge is neither too hot nor too cold. Through deep work, cultivating this effect will become easier. So seek this balance that Goldilocks achieved in your own life, never forgetting that it must be voluntary effort towards something meaningful and worthwhile. A lot of people are afraid to accept mediocrity because they believe that if they accept it, they'll never achieve anything, never improve, and that their life won't matter. This kind of thinking is dangerous. Once you accept that a life is worthwhile only if it is notable and great, you basically accept that most of the human population, including yourself, sucks and is worthless. This mindset can quickly turn dangerous to both yourself and others. There is an inclination to believe that we are different, unique, that we'll be the black swan of the world, taking it by surprise with our incredible innovations, thoughts, or character. Statistically, and I apologize for being direct, that's not going to happen, or at least, it's not probable. By definition, there have to be some mediocre people for others to stand out. If everyone is super, no one is, stated from The Incredibles. However, this statement shouldn't be misconstrued with me saying that you shouldn't set goals, be ambitious, and strive for steps above mediocrity, but rather accept that a mediocre life is not any less worthwhile than a traditionally successful one. In Ego is the Enemy, Ryan Holiday has a chapter dedicated to becoming aware of the whole. One of the quotes that stood out to me most from this chapter is from Neil deGrasse Tyson and reads, quote, "When I look up in the universe, I know I am small, but I also know I am big. I'm big because I'm connected to the universe and the universe is connected to me," end quote. As Holiday later adds, quote, "Realize how much came before you and how only wisps of it remain," end quote. No matter how materially successful or unsuccessful one is in their lifetime, they will have the same end. Like the great empires of Rome, Greece, and Spain, they all eventually came to an end. Embracing mediocrity doesn't equal letting go of ambitions and wishes, but observing how it's okay, how the role you play in the world is infinitely small, yet infinitely substantial. I examine my entire day and go back over what I've done and said, hiding nothing from myself, passing nothing by. It takes a while before you can be fully honest with yourself. If you decide to journal or are already doing it, you may sometimes feel you aren't being completely honest with yourself. This realization is troubling to all of us. How can we expect to reflect on our day when the mirror is a hallucination? when what we're trying to look back on is a children's book-like retelling of our day, not its reality. This is something I struggle with too. As I sit down and start writing in the morning or evening, it's difficult to reach inside my brain and pick apart what I'm actually thinking. I found, and this may seem a little obvious, that asking yourself the question of how am I feeling is the best initiator for what can lead to a thoughtful reflection. Again, you may just be like, well, duh. But when writing about ourselves, or at least in my case, I notice that sometimes I cannot go beyond the superficial bird's eye perspective of myself. It's when I do manage to breach this wall that I get the most value out of sitting with my thoughts. These moments where I am truly honest with myself can be daunting and scary, as confronting any emotion or feeling often is. But if we take the children's book approach to reflection, where instead of confronting the true thoughts and puzzles of our mind, we tell ourselves that everything is fine and that nothing is wrong, then there is really no point to even thinking in the first place. In summary, if you decide to start thinking more about yourself, being more conscious of how you feel and why you do so, then you have to be honest. Thank you for dedicating your time and listening to this episode. Remember, we also have a weekly newsletter, The Book Basement Bulletin. Sign up by going to the link in the show notes or by visiting thebookbasement.substack.com. Also in the show notes, a link to purchase the book I talked about in this episode. Be sure to leave us a review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it helps us immensely. Finally, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at bookbasementpod. That is bookbasementPOD. Once again, thank you for stopping by, and I hope to see you soon.